right, guys, we are back this week. Something a little different. It's not going to be a CWF personality. It is going to be somebody you heard last week, though, and I think I already said that last week. So you already know it's Pro Wrestling Torch senior columnist Bruce Mitchell. Bruce has been a friend of mine since I was practically a teenager. Bruce took a chance back when I called him off of getting his number online, back when you could do that. And said, hey, this person in my ECW documentary said these things about you. I just wanted to, you know if you wanted to react to it. He said, yeah. And myself and Kevin Kiernan, my creative partner, drove all the way down to Greensboro, North Carolina for the first time in the spring of 2001. And Bruce was really good to us, gave us a very long interview. We all went out to dinner. It was a very cool experience. I still know the man. I still consider him a friend. This week, we're gonna bounce around a lot, man. I don't stay on topic. I talk a lot. Bruce doesn't stay on topic. He talks a lot, although he'll yell at me for saying that. Or maybe he won't. We talk about the origins of him finding CWF, knowing Brad when Brad Stutz, a.k.a. Stutzy, was younger, like a kid practically, and what he sees in CWF that he thinks they do right. This is the first of a few with Bruce. So let's get to it. I'll talk to you guys after the episode. All right. I am at Mother Tucker's in Greensboro. And since I'm in Greensboro, in the shadow of the Greensboro Coliseum, I decided to go visit my old pal, Torch senior columnist, Bruce Mitchell. Bruce, how are you?
Doing fine.
You've been a CWF fan for how long now?
Well, the CWF has been around, I guess, 17 years. They were on television with a half-hour show in the local market for several years. It didn't get a whole lot of traction, but they had tricked out their a little TV studio to look like the old television studios, the Territory Wrestling.
The Techwood Drive?
The Techwood Drive in Atlanta, and then also WRL studio in the Charlotte studios where the Crocketts had run. I like to go to wrestling shows. It's like my friends do. We go. And so figured out to go to this. And they had good shows. They were, you know, they had some talented wrestlers, but they also had, it was also just another independent show. We would go every 3 or 4 months or every 6 months. 2 or 3 years ago, went to one and I went, this makes sense. Like the structure of the show, building to the main event, the right people on the show were in the right places. I had known Brad Stutz, who, you know, the play-by-play announcer and creative force, ever since 20 years ago in Thomasville, going to shows, and he and his friends would be at the show. Corey Edsel and John Foy would be at the show just like my friends were, except they were, you know, he's a lot younger. He's a teenage kid, and he was the head of the, they were running the Rick Link fan club. Rick Link was the number one guy in the promotion, so I remembered like him, and then he started managing on some shows, he started doing some things, and I was like, all right. There was something better about these shows, and I think I was maybe even late to the party with Trevor Lee. There was something special about these main events, there was something good, and I started really enjoying it. And I was also like, the booking makes sense from show to show. When I go to the next show, there's something that happened in the show before that is built on, and it's not just a mess, or it's not overbooked. You're not WWE, you're not on national television. You have to book towards the people that are there. So, I just like got more and more impressed with it, and then I started realizing it was Brad, and Brad Stutz and the people around him.
What's made you comfortable with being like, I'm not just being a homer, I can talk about this? Because I've listened to you and read you. I've read you for almost 20 years now, but I've listened to your podcast since 2006. And you used to talk about, oh, I went to the local indie, and it would be very much like Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus the Evil whatever as the main event, and then a bunch of weekend warriors, and then something changed there.
And I had a good time at those shows a lot of times, but when we were talking with Brad, it was like, also you go to those shows and go, I want to go to an indie show because I'll have a good time, and it'll be a mess, but I'll have a good time, and then an hour and a half into it, you're like, this thing has 2 more hours to go, and I would look at John Hitchcock and go, let's go, you know, because it's like, and you would wear out, but...
Well, what's made it accessible in, I guess I'm cart before the horse there. What's made it so that you feel comfortable talking about it? A lot of people can see it, and you're going, this isn't just this thing that's in my backyard. This is something that's relevant to independent wrestling and the culture that has grown with independent wrestling, and that you can see it, you can watch it.
Well, I think part of it was, and I wouldn't say I was the first person to notice it at all, that there has been a resurgence. And I think it really does go back to there's a tradition of professional wrestling in the Southeast, and that the Southerners, you know, would, you know, that you could make money with Southerners marketing fights. And then also, and I will say this, that Ric Flair's been on television at some point or another for the last 35 years here. It gives people a thread. But there's been this resurgence of independent wrestling, and Ring of Honor led it in a lot of ways across the Northeast, and then in the Southeast, it's there where you've got these wrestlers who are serious, and it's amazing to me in certain ways because you've got these wrestlers very serious about what they're doing. The technology allows them to study in ways that I don't think wrestlers ever did before. They learn from wrestling, you know, 7 days a week and you know, 30, 40 years ago or 50, 60 years ago, and traveling and listening to the people that were their mentors in the business. And now you have that technology where you can study Lucha Libre, you can study Japan, you can study the old days, you can study a lot of it and pick some things out, and they're pushing each other to be better. So there's this talent in this area that really has is really doing well. The problem is that the wrestling business is constricted because of the technology and because of the choices people in different companies have made that weren't good choices, where there's not that many jobs, full-time jobs for people, but they have this passion to do it, where before there was this passion to learn your industry, but you knew that if there would be a job waiting for you, a full-time lucrative job that not only was lucrative of money, but lucrative in attention, lucrative in pussy, lucrative in all kinds of different ways, that that there was a place to get you there. And now you see people, you see these acts all the time where it's like, if there was more jobs in the wrestling business, they'd be working full time. They're good enough. And so I think...
And they would get better. Theoretically, they would get better.
And they would get better, but yeah. They're also like... But they're not looking at, like, I didn't, you know, I work this other job, but my passion is wrestling, and I'm working on it, I'm working all the time, and I'm finding these places where it's my social life, it's my life, and everybody speaks the same language, and they're learning that way, but there's a disconnect between, I want to have that five-star match instead of, I want to start growing my business, whether it's a promotion or a wrestler, where I can charge more money because more people come to see me because I'm so good. Because I'm so, and not just so good in the ring with doing moves, but so good with engaging people, with them looking up to me, or with them going, that guy's a star and I want to go follow him, or she's cool. And whenever she's on the show, she's on that. And this promotion does have that, and it has it with Eric Royal, it has it with Chip Sterling, it has it with...
That guy named Trevor Lee.
No, well, Trevor Lee is like the lead, but once you have a temp post,
yeah,
you've got Trevor Lee, you've got, you know, they've got a great heel, you know, like this guy with a lot of experience and great attitude who is really, you know, who's really underrated in a lot of ways.
And
like,
biggest they use secret him, in like, the business, really, I'd argue, at this point.
And
a heel.
Because he's not overexposed, and they have Roy Wilkins III, if they're on the show, you can count on, you're going to see some good stuff.
And that was part one of what will probably be a three-part series, if not at least two parts. I want to thank Bruce again. It was really cool getting to record him and Stutzy talking all about wrestling they cared about and ideologies of wrestling. Also really awesome anytime I get to sit and talk with Bruce about wrestling. After all the years of interviewing him, I've come full circle. I actually got the chance to interview Bruce yet again down in Greensboro. And this was truly full circle because I interviewed him for Boys of Gibsonville documentary that I'm doing. And that was in early August. So thanks again to Bruce. Our theme song, as always, brought to you by Poddington Bear. Find more amazing Poddington Bear work at poddingtonbear.com. He has a lot of interesting instrumental music. That it's very diverse. go support CWF. Follow CWF Mid-Atlantic on Twitter. Just look up at CWF Mid-Atlantic. If you want to follow them on Facebook, it's pretty much the same thing. Look up CWF Mid-Atlantic. You'll find the group. Join it. Follow along. You can also find them at cwfworldwide.com. That takes you right to their YouTube page, so you can watch CWF Worldwide every Wednesday. It drops at 9 p.m. Eastern. They have a ton of content in there that isn't just worldwide. Some stuff I've actually done. There's some specials in there that are really cool that I'm proud of that you should look up, like The Journey featuring Nick Richards and Trevor Lee. Don't forget about CWF FanCon. Yeah, I'm co-running CWF FanCon the weekend of October 13th and 14th. That's a Friday evening. And then most of the day Saturday. And it all builds to the CWF Rumble, which is on October 14th at the CWF Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium, which is where most of our convention is happening, really, although we are having discount rooms and hanging out at the Ramada in Burlington. Find me on Twitter. That's what you got to do. You got to go to at @johnphilapavage. I think it's in the description of this episode. And find me. Or you could find Jeremy Bryan, who's also co-running the awesome CWF FanCon. Jeremy is at J Bryant, that's J-B-R-Y-A-N-T, and then 025. That's all numbers, 025. J Bryant, 025. So look us up on Twitter. Both of us have all the information pinned at the top of our Twitter pages about the awesome CWF FanCon. Please come down. We're having a catered dinner that's going to cost like roughly 10 bucks on Friday night. There'll be a Q&A on Friday night. There'll be a tape watching party. You can watch all of your favorite CWF matches. And then Saturday is just a whole day of hanging out, Q&As. A bunch of guys will be selling merch. We have some other fun surprises planned. And again, it all leads to the CWF Rumble. I will see you next week with more Bruce Mitchell interview. This has been CWF Road Diaries. Talk to you later, guys.